Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My obstacle is very different, you know, and it's very unique. We understand those things, but I wasn't on the down part of my career. I played through that. I do know that it's not my athletic ability. It's not because I'm going to be 30 next year. You know, so I know it's not athletic ability, you know, so I'm going to scratch that and say that my situation is very different. I understand that, but one thing I've always came from in my life, when you start something, you finish it. And everything that I've been through in my life, for me to get back on the football field, I will be finishing to be able to tell my children a story that, you know, something that their dad went through. I want to be able to dictate that to them, not let others dictate that for me. That all stems from, you know, can we get a meeting?
So you're saying you haven't met with anybody, any coach, any owner, anybody else about coming back and getting a job? No one has sat down with you. We're in contact. Yeah.
Well, coaches, we're in contact with coaches, general managers, and things like that. But my situation is different. Like I said, we have to go to another level to try to, you know, get a second chance. I do understand the situation. Like, domestic violence is not something to take lightheartedly. You know, I've learned a lot about it. I'm not sitting here pounding my chest saying I deserve a second chance. But I know my second chance is going to have to come from, you know, an owner's approval. That's the hurdle, you know, and I'm not sitting up here saying that Ray Rice is deserving of that. Ray Rice is working towards finishing a story the right way. Yes, I do want to finish on the field, but I am 29 years old and I got a long life to live. I do want to finish the right way.
Doctors told me since two spinal fusions, you know, can't play Major League Baseball anymore. So I just want to thank my teammates, you know, all the coaches, staff. You know, I'm really miss being around those guys because a lot of fun. And I just been in the big league clubhouse since I was their age. So, you know, to not be able to play, it's going to be tough. Enjoy my career so far and play with these guys. He's helped me out a lot this year. You know, seeing him come to the field every day with a good attitude really helped me out, you know.
I'm on Rangers now, so I forgot about the teams I played with. Also, thank Detroit. And especially Milwaukee, you know, that's where I started out. You know, that's where everything, you know, that's what got me here. This year is the most fun I've ever had and the best I ever felt mentally about baseball, you know. It's, that's the only thing that really hurts about not being able to play is that my brain was really good with my body now. It just gave out.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The extravaganza, indeed, that's what we are. Welcome as we continue our incredible fun week that we have had of Olympic coverage, of preseason NFL football getting underway tonight and then tomorrow for the local teams that we cover, baseball stories all over the map. The Central Division race remains a tight one at 3.5, and I'll tell you what, it's been a very, very fun time of the year right here on the Afternoon Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us right here on The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader Bob France with you until 5 o'clock when Mike Miller brings you drive time. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Mr. K, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, doing all right. I had to grab that Prince Fielder thing. I really did. I mean, for him showing his emotion like that, but really, you got two guys. Maybe neither are Hall of Famers. We know why one of them. But such a stark contrast in the retirements, or in one case, both cases, forced retirements of two different players that have two different...
For very different reasons.
Yes, for very different reasons, and two players that are essentially getting the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of from fans. One you feel bad for, one you're like, oh, good riddance.
Well, are they? Are fans all good riddance on Ray Rice?
No, I was referring to Prince Fielder versus A-Rod in this case.
Okay, you were staying in the same sport.
Yes, I'm staying in the same sport on this one.
Okay, I'm looking at the montage, And we hear, you know, we hear Ray Rice and we hear Prince Fielder and we hear and we watch obviously the Alex Rodriguez story. So there's really three forced retirements here.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, in our conversation, there's three forced retirements. A-Rod, most people are good riddance. Ray Rice, most people or many people at the very least are good riddance. And then of course, Prince Fielder, where people are feeling really, really broken up for him. And with good reason, because I feel a terrible for a guy. You hear that emotion in his voice, and you can only do it on radio, what we just did on radio. But if you saw it on television, his children were broken up. They had their heads down. They were in tears as Prince Fielder made that announcement, and you know he was breaking up, they were breaking up. It was really, really difficult to watch. When you see somebody's love of the game on display, as pure as it was in that situation with Prince Fielder, and the real sadness that he wasn't able to continue to play, and you know I don't want to say he's up there sad that he's not able to honor his contract because he's owed what $20 million and they have to pay him.
Not to mention $6 million from the Tigers for the next couple of years as part of that trade.
Yeah, how much do they owe him over the?
Because I want to say it's around 22. They still owe him.
I thought it was more than
it
that.
It could be.
Wait. It's much, much more than that. It's much more than that because his contract runs through 2020, does it not?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's 2016. It's much, much more than that. So his contract, I mean, when I say he's upset because he can't play out his contract, I don't mean just that, you know, the money, because he's going to get paid. He has to get paid. This is not something where he's retiring and not living up to the terms. He is medically unable to play.
And will never be cleared to play again.
That's right. And this is the difference. You know, we had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago about the difference between NFL player contracts and MLB and NBA player contracts.
Yep.
As NFL players are complaining and griping, or at least some are, and I'm trying to remember the origin of that story, the complaints about NFL deals. Who was it who signed recently, and there was talk about how, you know, the NBA contracts are so much bigger and they're guaranteed.
Well, was the Bennett brothers, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right. It was. It was Martellus and Michael Bennett.
Because
that's
they decided
exactly
to say something in that made it go off those rails into something completely different.
Yeah, that is exactly right. That is, anyway, the point being, this is why the NFL, which of course you are much more prone to potential career-ending injuries than you are in baseball because it's a much more violent sport.
Right.
It's why they can't guarantee contracts all the way through. Because you get a guy in a situation like this, and here's the number. It's $96 million, Jim. It's more.
Yep.
It's 20-some
per year. 24 for the next 4 years, not to mention, I believe, 4 more years of through 2020 of the Tigers paying an additional $6 million.
There you go.
So it's basically $30 million a season for the next 4 years. He's still going to get paid.
It says, I don't know. I'm just looking at Forbes right now, and it says he's leaving with his $96 million salary he doesn't have to play for.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Now, hold on. CNN and Money.com, MoneyCNN.com, says he actually has a $106 million contract. I mean, $106 million worth of unearned money that he will take between now and 2020. So anyway, six per year is what you're saying. 24 million of it belongs to the Tigers, or is the Tigers' responsibility?
$6 million more from the Tigers each season through 2020. The rest of the contract is $24 million a season. That's through Texas.
There you go. That makes sense. There's the 24 million times four is your 96, and then you get to the 106 is the total because the value of the deal was a 9-year deal with the Tigers for 214. 9 years, $214 million. He signed before the 2012 season. So he's owed about $10 million from that point through the end of this season, then $24 million a year for each of the next four. So that's where you get your $104 million that he's owed. Okay. Again, I hate to keep rehashing this, but I heard the emotions of a guy in that interview, or that press conference, I should say, of a guy who is just absolutely, you know, decimated by the fact that he can't play the game. He wanted to live out his contract, not because of the money he feels like he has to earn, but because he loves the game. And, you know, Prince Fielder is one of these guys where a lot of people during even his prime, his heyday when he was one of the most feared sluggers in the American League. And when
he was an Iron Man to a degree. He played literally every day until all this stuff started about 2.5 years ago.
Yes, he did. And he was one of the most feared sluggers when he was back-to-back with Miggy in Detroit, even though it was a short period of time. And then certainly in Milwaukee, he was just a beast of a hitter. And he's one of those guys, though, when you look at his body, you wouldn't know that he really was dedicated to playing a long time. You wouldn't know, you wouldn't believe that maybe he took it seriously because
he had that Tony Gwynn physique going.
Yeah, well, or his Cecil Fielder physique,
yeah.
you could say. You know, the long time, not long, long time, but 319 career home runs for each of these guys, Cecil and Prince Fielder. Cecil, of course, a big part in Detroit. So he's got one of those rotund figures. You could look at him and say Bartolo Colon. You could look at him and say David Wells. You look at him and say Tony Gwynn, as you pointed out. And those were all really great players.
Yes, they were.
You might not think that they took it seriously and that this is something that bothers them, but it obviously did. You said it yourself. He was an Iron Man for a long time, and he wants to play. You could tell in his voice this isn't just like, I'm going to miss the fans. I'm going to miss the popularity of being a major league ball player. I'm going to miss the celebrity status. He's going to miss playing baseball. You can make that, you could certainly, detect that in his voice. And
he referenced that in the presser too. As you pointed out, this is one of those radio, but visual. The visual is kids were sitting next to him, as you point out, heads down. And at one point he referenced his kids in that. I've been in major league clubhouses since I was their age,
right.
Which of course,
growing up
all
Pops.
Tiger fans know those stories when he used to hit home runs as what is a 12-year-old during batting practice at the old Tiger Stadium.
Exactly right. Yeah. And there's a few kids like that who are fortunate enough to grow up in a major league setting like, Prince Fielder did, Ken Griffey Jr. did, and a few others. Barry Bonds did because of Bobby Bonds. They grow up, in the clubhouse watching their dads,
yep.
and becoming part of the culture and kind of, learning it and living the culture. And then they're good enough and talented enough to make it themselves. And it's just a great story. So he's grown up with the game from birth, really. And you could hear it in his voice. And some of those cuts there that Prince Fielder is truly genuinely saddened by this, not just going to miss the rock star life of a major league ball player, but this is all he's known. Every spring, it's time to go to spring training.
Yep.
Whether he was going as a kid with dad or whether he was reporting on his own, this is what he does. And now he's not going to be able to do that anymore. So really a sad, sad moment there. And we were talking yesterday. A little bit about this, Jim, and I asked one of our guests about Prince Fielder. No, it was Anthony Fenech, I think, and Fenech,
yep.
was kind of referencing, he's not going to be necessarily missed too terribly much by some Tiger fans who are offended by some of the things that he had said. But I think that just watching that raw emotion yesterday might salve a lot of wounds that anybody really felt or suffered.
Yeah, and one would hope, especially from that Tiger fan point of view. I mean, we all know the story, especially Tigers fans, about the non-relationship between Prince and his dad, Cecil. And then he came to Detroit, and I know there was some fans that didn't like a couple of things he said, and he was only here for a couple years. But he was in the playoffs. He was amongst that lineup that went to the playoffs in the ALCS a couple times, did have a few World Series at bats as a Tiger. And he was generally a cheery guy. And to me, it's the contrast. Especially, forget the Ray Rice part of it, which I also played the Bonds. Just sticking in baseball, just such a stark contrast to when we refer to A-Rod's forced retirement that comes tomorrow, especially in the view of most fans. It's just, I find those things interesting, and they're all lining up at the same time.
Yeah, it's weird the way the A-Rod one is playing out. I mean, you can't pick the time that Prince Fielder's case happened.
Right.
Because it's a medical thing. It's simple. They said, no, you're never going to play again. You're never going to get cleared again. That's it. You're done. If you try to play now, you're going to do so without medical clearance. You and the Tigers, well, you'll be responsible for your own health.
Yep.
And the Tigers, whoever were to sign you, the Rangers, of course, have the rights. If they were to let you play without clearance, they are liable for anything that happens to you, and they would never do that. So you're done. No choice on the timing of that. The A-Rod story, there was a choice that it's all lining up now. They didn't have to do this. Alex Rodriguez, of course, has been struggling all year. A year after having a great 39-year-old season, it's like that calendar flipped from 3-9 to 4-0, and suddenly all of his talent went away. And it's bizarre because he had a great season, and it looked like, wow, A-Rod is still doing this at 39. If he can bang out 20, 22, 23 a year for the next 3 years, just like this, and I don't remember exactly what he had last year. But if he can do this, you know, he might still be able to get there.
Sure.
He might still be able to get up there to not just to 700, and of course he is four short of that now as he hangs him up tomorrow, but to get to, you know, the Babe or to Hank or to Barry Bonds. And not that you have to feel a certain way about that, because quite obviously Alex Rodriguez is like Barry Bonds in, and not like at all Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron.
Right.
And yet he is one of the steroid sheets. But he had what? How many did he have last year? He had in 2016, he had 20, hold on a second, or 2015. Oh, he had 33. He had 33 home runs last year and 86 RBIs. This after coming back, of course, missing 2014 because of the suspension.
Yeah.
So he was, and how about this? He finished 28th in the MVP balloting last year. And I know that it sounds silly, but I mean, he actually got votes in the MVP balloting last year.
Kind of deserved a random vote down the line, actually.
He hit 250, 33, and 86. And so you think, wow, you know, if he can come back and do another, say, 25 next year and another 20 the year after that, now we're getting up there into the 730 territory, 740, and maybe he can go up there and do this. And now you're going to have two steroid sheets at the top of the list, which is kind of irrelevant. But it just kind of came to a – you know what it looks like to me in some ways? It looked strikingly familiar to how Peyton Manning ended. Not the controversy, obviously, and the scandal with the steroids and everything else. But Peyton Manning, you know, 2 years before this past year, threw 55 touchdown passes.
Yep.
And won another MVP.
Right.
I mean, think about that. 2 years earlier – 55. He shattered the record for touchdowns and just added to the legacy. And then suddenly, you know, and this was after the four neck surgeries that were largely responsible for the Colts saying, you know what, Peyton, sayonara, we've got a chance to draft the next great thing in quarterbacking and Andrew Luck, so we're going to let you roll. No disrespect, but you've had four neck surgeries. We don't think you can play anymore. He came back and played more. And played that well, 55 touchdowns, got rolled in the Super Bowl, as we know, by the Seahawks, but 55 touchdowns, and an MVP, and now it just like a calendar flipped over, and it's, I can't throw anymore. I can't feel the ball in my fingertips even worse than before because of those surgeries. I can't snap off that throw, that hard 15 to 25 yeah. yard out without it fluttering and being picked. You know, I can't make the reads quit. Well, the reads aren't really an issue, but my body can't follow through with the reads as fast as my minds can make them. Those kinds of things just can't happen with the flip of a calendar. And in a way, that's kind of what Alex Rodriguez, 33 home runs, 86 RBIs, 250 hitter, you know, primarily designated hitter, but he played in 151 out of 162 last year. He had 620 plate appearances, 523 ABs. He's out there doing that, and then suddenly this year it's like, flip, I'm 40 now and 203, 9 home runs, 29 RBIs, 63 games played, only 235 plate appearances, not good enough to put in the lineup on a regular basis. It's just weird how Father Time, who is always undefeated, every time somebody challenges Father Time wins. Eventually, but he just kind of says, all right, calendar flipped over and now it's my time. You're done. Yep. You have no body left anymore.
Yeah. And speaking of Father Time, by the way, especially since part of my angle to this, Bob, is just the from a fan's perspective, the different emotional responses, thinking of A-Rod versus saying Prince Fielder. Here's something else to quote unquote dislike A-Rod for. Everybody ready to feel old now? With A-Rod leaving after tomorrow, there will only be 7 active Major League players left in baseball that debuted in the 1990s. And one of them is retiring after this year, David Ortiz.
Wow. Wow, that's
the others
amazing.
Are Bartolo Colon, okay. Adrian Beltre,
right.
A.J. Pierzynski,
right.
Carlos Beltran, and he technically hasn't retired, but injuries are going to force that, Joe Nathan.
Wow.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, you are making me feel old with that. Although I am, so I have a good reason to feel old no matter what. but in all seriousness, that's an amazing thing. So he debuted in 1994.
Yep.
Just for a cup of coffee, 17 games. 95, he played in 48 games. His first full season in the bigs was 96. And that was when he played in 146 games, and all he did was bang around, let's see, 358.
That's a batting title, by the way. His only one.
It is indeed. 54 doubles, 36 home runs, 123 runs driven in, 141 runs scored. My God. And he was second in the MVP that year. So, and a Silver Slugger Award as well. So, yeah. And nobody, and this is the one of those weird things, and we've talked about it at length with Barry Bonds and with Roger Clemens and others, where you say these guys did not need to cheat because nobody is alleging or accusing Alex Rodriguez of cheating when he was with the Seattle Mariners. All of this stuff came when he signed that $250 million contract with the Rangers and then a $275 million contract with the Yankees. Those are the times, according to the reports that we all have and his admissions, when he was using stuff. The talent this guy had was so off the charts. I mean, that was his first full year in the bigs. His second full year, let's see, what did he do? He followed it up with 300. Where is it? 1997. Batting average of 300. He had 23 home runs, down from 36, by the way, but still very good. 123 RBIs, down to 84. 40 home runs. He only played in 141 games. Yeah, still a full season.
Yeah.
He was an all-star. Then he cranked it back up again the next year, again, as a 22-year-old. Still a puppy in baseball terms, 22 years old. He goes out there and hits 310, launches 42 rockets, 124 driven in, 35 more doubles, 213 hits, and is the ninth place finisher in the MVP award.
And incidentally, starting with 98 until 2010 with the Yankees, he was always over 100 RBIs, too.
Yeah,
every year.
Big, long string of them. Now, but then again, that's through Texas, too, and into the Yankees. And
yep.
And now we got to say, okay, well, how much of that was aided? And you'll never know how much of that was aided. How much of his performance and production was aided by steroids? I don't know. You don't know. We'll never know. Those home run totals are astronomical, but you cannot say that they were all tainted because you look at what he did when he first started. 52, 57, 47, 36, 48, 35, 54, and then 35, 30, 30, 16, 18, 7 in that injury plague 2013 year, then the suspension in 2014, and then bouncing back, presumably clean again now at 39 last year, given the fact that if he gets tested positive one more time and he's under constant testing at that phase of the program, that he's going to be banned for life. You know, he bombs 33 and with those 86. So it's impossible to tell how much the juice aided him. And that's why I will always taint his legacy. It's why, for me, he'll never be in the Hall of Fame. He never should be in the Hall of Fame because he is as dirty. I don't know how many home runs Barry Bonds would have had if he had never juiced. What I do know is that it wouldn't have been 762. I do know that his previous career high, I want to say, was what, 39? Wasn't it 39? Or was it 49?
For Bonds?
Yeah. Maybe it was 49 before he starts juicing and hits 73.
Because the story goes he didn't really start the true juicing until after he and we all saw what Maguire and Sosa did in 98.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's all delineated in the book Game of Shadows.
Exactly.
It's all there. I mean, that was
46
his problem.
With the 93 Giants, his first year in San Francisco, was his most in a
46.
Season before
so
the juice.
46 was his previous career high.
Correct.
Then he starts juicing so that he can catch up to Maguire and Bonds in the home run categories because he's a far superior player. Did I say Bonds, Maguire, and Sosa? Far superior player to Maguire and Sosa.
He was always mad. He never got the love.
But what's that?
He was always mad, though. He never got the love.
Well, he never got the love because he was an a-hole.
I know.
I mean, seriously, it wasn't that he got mad because nobody loved him. It was that nobody loved him because he was always mad. Nobody loved him because he was a jerk. He even acknowledged and admitted, now that he's back in the game as the hitting coach there with the Marlins, he's acknowledged that he was a jerk and he needed to be a nicer guy to the press. Looking back on his time, that he completely acted inappropriately and so on and so forth.
Essentially, looking back, we're talking about a guy in Fielder that started this conversation, essentially growing up in a major league clubhouse, which you could say in a way about Bonds, well, just like Bonds. What you can say about Bonds is because of his dad and whatever went on, according to Barry and them, he took the wrong lessons.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah, he really did. He felt so entitled to everything, and he was so good, and the game came so easy to him. It was just weird that he just had such an elitist attitude, and everybody hated that. But he wanted to be loved, and he was so unlovable. And that's why when he saw, and I don't want to go back through the whole book Game of Shadows, but if you've never read it, my God,
yes.
You'll owe it to yourself. Read Game of Shadows. But You know, he saw the nation cutting in. Remember, every sports outlet would cut in when McGuire was coming up to bat in that year that they were chasing Maris at 61.
Yeah.
And it was Sosa and it was McGuire, Sosa, McGuire. And then after they both passed 61, it was who's going to finish with a higher number? You know, and it was McGuire, Sosa, and they're cutting in on these guys. And eventually McGuire hits 70 and Sosa hits 66. And then they go on to do that again. And Sosa, I think, had 3 years of home runs in the 60s.
I know it was at least two in a row, 98, 99.
Yeah, I think he had another one, too. But Bonds is watching the whole world being, you know, just completely in love with these two guys for you know, bringing so much attention. Remember, the sport needed that, too, if you recall, after the 94 strike.
Especially you know, for you non-Cleveland fans, that exact time period is a little clouded for Cleveland fans because of how good the Indians were in selling out, but that wasn't how it was with the rest of baseball at that time.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Baseball had that strike in 94. The World Series was canceled. The World Series, the Indians very well may have gone to.
They were holding the wild card that day. I still remember that.
Yeah, as they did the next year and then again in 97. But anyway, the sport lost a lot of fan support over that strike. And we know what happened. I mean, it was they were struggling to get people back through the turnstiles again. And the home run race, two things, helped bring it back. Cal Ripken Jr.'s chasing and passing of the Iron Horse, Lou Gehrig, in terms of the consecutive games played. And then the great home run ball chase, the whole McGuire and Sosa thing. And Bonds couldn't stand that guys who were not as good as he was were getting all of that attention and love, and that's when he really made the decision. Yep. If I'm going to get the love that I deserve, even though I'm the only 40-40 guy, or me and Canseco was already a cheater too. But, you know, he's a regular 30-30 guy and another 40-40 guy. It's not enough. I got to do what they're doing. So he goes from, you know, 205 pounds to 240 pounds, and his head grows three hat sizes, and all the rest happens. Barry Bonds ends up ruining a legacy that would have been Hall of Fame bound, no question about it, if he had not cheated. And Alex Rodriguez, which is how we got on this, did the same thing. Maybe not for the same reasons. You know, A-Rod, according to some, and these are the most sympathetic baseball analysts, pundits, columnists, or whatever you want to call them, the most sympathetic voices on this issue say that, well, at least A-Rod didn't do it for the money. A-Rod didn't cheat so that he could get a $250,000 payday, a $250 million contract from the Rangers. He didn't start juicing until after he got that contract. He was actually doing it, these sympathetic voices say, to earn the contract, to live up to it, so that he didn't feel like he was cheating the Rangers for giving him the largest contract in the history of sports. And then the Yankees, unbeknownst to them that he had been juicing, signed him to the next largest contract in the history of sports at $275 million for 10 years. So, you know, and again, the story goes that that's when he started doing some of these things. He felt like he needed to earn every penny of that, and he didn't feel like he could do it on his own. So that's when he started, you know, using the supplements. So he didn't need to. Bonds didn't need to. Most of those guys didn't need to, and they would be on their way to the Hall of Fame. But the fact of the matter is they did, and so for me, I don't know what Alex Rodriguez's total would be. He's at 696 now. I don't know what it would be. Did it give him 100 more? Maybe he'd be at 596? Still a Hall of Famer. Many times over.
Because baseball has those things with numbers, 3,000 hits, 300 wins, 500 home runs is like automatic.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, and you look at his career totals, for God's sake, it's one of the greatest careers in the history of the sport. 3,114 hits as of now in 22 seasons, and you know, the 696, as we say, 2,084 RBIs. That's, I think, third on the all-time list.
Yeah, that's the amazing part. He and Palmeiro are going to be the only 3,000 hitters that won't be in the Hall of Fame. Well, Pete Rose, of course, too.
Right, there you go. For a different reason, obviously.
Yep.
But I don't know what Barry Bonds' total would have been. But it wouldn't have been 762. Did he add another 100 to his total? Did he add another 150 to his total? Again, considering the fact that Barry Bonds' numbers, you know, his highest career home run total was 46, I think is what you just said, right?
46 pre-juicing, and that was 93, his first year in San Francisco.
Yeah, and so he goes from 46 career high to 73, which is just simply impossible. I don't care who you are or what you think. That's not possible to do.
Well, here are the numbers, actually.
Especially when you consider his age. Because when people, you know, that calendar we were talking about, when that calendar flips over on normal people, which means pretty much everybody, to at a certain age, your body starts to decrease its production. And look at Ken Griffey Jr. as a prime example. And when everybody else's body, including some of the greatest, most legendary hitters in the history of the sport, when their bodies all start to break down in their mid to late 30s, that's when Barry Bonds' body started to blow up and get stronger and bigger, and his production was greater than it had ever been before.
Right.
And in 2001, when he hit that 73, then he goes 46, 45, 45. These are numbers, of course, that would have been way higher had anybody pitched to him. He had more intentional walks thrown to him in the last 5 years of his career, honestly, than anybody else has ever had walks, I think. I mean, and that's a bit of an exaggeration, but not much. But his, you know, his walk totals, I mean,
like 2004, he led the National League, obviously.
Well, hold on. Let me set it up.
Okay.
Because I want to go back to his pre, you know, juicing time.
Sure.
When he was still in his prime as one of the greatest players in the game, an MVP in 1990. Second in the MVP voting in 1991. MVP again in 92 and 93. We're talking about his prime here. He walked 93 times. Then in 91, I'm sorry, that was 80.
No, that was 89. Yeah. That was 88.
90, another, yeah. 93 times. 1991, he walked 107 times. 1992, MVP 127 times. Still very reasonable numbers.
Well, I believe.
126. You get up into his last 5 years of his career, really his last six, counting the 73 home run season, 177, 198, 148, 232,
120 of those were, and 120 of those were intentional.
And 120 intentional, which, think about that, more intentional walks than he had total walks in his prime years when he was winning MVPs.
Yep.
And that was, by the way, that 232 was when he was 39 years old. His body should have been so like everybody else's at that age, and shrinking down, his reflexes slower. He should not have been able to do this. So what he did in just 373 official at-bats, 617 plate appearances, but that in 2004, 373 official at-bats because of all of the walks, 45 home runs in 373 at-bats is simply inhuman, and he did it at an age when everybody else's body is begging for relief. Lay me down, please. I can't get up and move very well right now. And he is at his physical peak. And then, of course, he did it for two more years in 2006 and 7. His last year, 132 walks in 477 plate appearances.
Which still led the league.
Yeah. So, again, trying to kind of ferret all of this out as the end of some of these careers happen, I feel very, very badly the way Prince Fielder's career is ending. I do not feel badly at all for Alex Rodriguez. He will go down kind of side by side with Barry Bonds as the two most successful home run cheaters in the history of the sport, knocking some of the great hitters in the, you know, power hitters in baseball history down several tiers, several pegs in the top 10 list, which we all used to know by heart before the cheaters got to them. There are two modern day players who earned their way into the top five, and I'm talking about Ken Griffey Jr., who was just inducted into the Hall last month, and Jim Thome, who will be inducted into the Hall one day. And I don't want to go off on Thome right now. On his whole leaving Cleveland thing, that there's still a sore spot there with me, just like there was with LeBron when he left. But from a production standpoint, that great big corn-fed mule never had to do anything other than be the big old country bumpkin he was. He never had to cheat, was never associated, was never named in the Miller report, was never never implicated by any actions or any innuendo or anything else. So they earned their way into that list. But so many of the others have knocked down so many legendary names, and that's why I will never forgive them, and why Alex Rodriguez, by the way, Alex Rodriguez, while he should be booed and viewed with the scorn that he is, at least in the way that I just, you know, described it, is finding a way to become a sympathetic figure on his way out the door. And I don't know how many people are paying attention outside of New York of the way Joe Girardi, the Yankees manager, is treating him. But it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting that A-Rod, who is kind of so universally despised, is actually getting some sympathy support now because Joe Girardi told the media back on Sunday when it was announced that Alex Rodriguez would play his last game on Friday, told the media that Alex could play in every game if he wanted to. He'd get him out there as much as he wanted to in his final week. And instead of doing that, he has sat him, no playing at all. Yesterday, he got a token pinch hit at bat late in the game. And apparently he's going to be in the lineup tonight. And Girardi is taking some serious heat for not letting one of the game's greatest all-time players, despite the controversy, go out with some dignity by getting four ABs, maybe even putting him at third base because the Yankee season is going nowhere. They know it's going nowhere. They traded Carlos Beltran because it's going nowhere. They traded Aroldis Chapman because it's going nowhere. And they traded Andrew Miller because it's going nowhere. And yet Joe Girardi said, I need to try to win every game because we're still 4.5 out of the wild card. So I can't put Alex there. And in his place, he hits a 190, a young kid hitting 191.
I saw that.
In other words, Girardi, who can't stand Rodriguez, is just sticking it right up Alex Rodriguez's nose on his way out the door and saying, tough, pal. He promised the media that he would get to play, and he's not letting him play. I wonder if he's even going to let him start in his career finale tomorrow.
Well, I imagine he definitely will start in that career finale tomorrow because it's back at home. For example, the other quirk, of course, to the not playing him at all this week is that the Yankees are in Fenway and the Red Sox fans are giving it to him as well.
Yeah, but they were begging for him too.
Right,
they were chanting. They were chanting Alex. They wanted him in part because, I mean, it's part of the lore. It's Alex Rodriguez.
Well, if you think
who's been a Yankee, who's been a Yankee for the last 10 years. They hate him. They want him out there so they can give one more round of booze.
And not
to
just
boo him
because,
out.
And don't forget, it's not just because he was a Yankee. Think back. That was right when he left Texas to go to New York, and Boston was supposedly the other choice.
That's right. That's true. That's a great point, too. So there's no love lost there. But, you know, and it was actually a Yankee for 12 years to wrap up his career. But they wanted another piece of him on the way out. And
sure.
You know what? By rights, they should have gotten it.
Yeah.
And he should have gotten an opportunity to go up there 4 times against them and try to put one over the monster. Or, you know, I mean, that's the way the game is. All right. That's a lot of stuff in the in a monologue here, Jim, talking about Fielder and Bonds and Alex Rodriguez. I want to take a time out here. I want to get a sports center, and then I want to talk about a few different things. In that opening montage that Jim Cushlin played for us, you heard from Ray Rice. And you might think, why? Why is it an odd time to be resurrecting the Ray Rice story? Well, it's really not, because NFL preseason football starts tonight. It was supposed to start on Sunday, as you know, in the Hall of Fame game, and we all know what happened there. The bad paint job caused the Hall of Fame game to be canceled. But at any rate, teams are in camp now, and they're about to start their preseasons to get ready for the 2016 season. And once again, Ray Rice is not on a roster. He's not in a camp. He will not be in a preseason game anywhere. He appeared on Mike and Mike yesterday morning talking about that. Talking about his experiences since the infamous elevator video showed him punching his then fiancée square in the face and then dragging her limp body out of the elevator, almost as if it was a pretty casual thing. He has not been on a roster since the explosion of media against him, the public opinion against him. The NFL's ridiculous casual 2-game ban, and then the okay indefinite ban, and then the okay we have to reduce that to what, a 4-game ban, and then by that time nobody wanted anything to do with him, in part because of the controversy, but in part because his production in his last year or two started to slip. Will Ray Rice ever be able to put on an NFL uniform again? That's what they were asking him on Mike and Mike yesterday, and I'm going to ask the same question of you. And I'm going to use it with a different kind of a twist, however. I'm going to ask that question as it compares to a different story. I think you'll be intrigued by this, and I want to hear your answer when I bring it to you. And I'll bring it to you after this timeout right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, rolling on, it's 3:51, only a short segment here before the top of the hour, and we'll give you another sports center. We'll come back and get some phone calls after that. I want to give just a small taste of what we're talking about here. This is Ray Rice, former Ravens running back, former All-Pro champion. He of course, in was, what, 2013, Jim? 13
yeah.
was when all this went down, when he was busted with that video of him punching his wife in the casino in Atlantic City parking garage. In the parking garage elevator, I think it was, in 2013. So he did not play last year, obviously, and did not play in 2014 either. And the question is will he ever play again? He was on with Mike and Mike talking about all of his crimes, all of his sins, and what he has done to atone for them, and whether or not he thinks he'll ever be able to play in the National Football League again. Here's just a little taste.
Well, you know, that's part of just, you know, you got to understand, and I looked at it as if I truly worried about everybody else getting a second chance, I know I would have went into a very dark place. So just being totally honest with you, I just kept working. I kept grinding. I just kept doing what I was going to do. I kept bettering myself as a person. I kept taking care of what I had to do with my family, you know, and I kept persevering through them tough times because I knew that I had to, you know, I couldn't bail on my family. You know, the people who loved me most were still looking at me and looking up to me to keep going. So I really didn't pay too much attention to other guys getting second chances.
All right. So that's Ray Rice answering a question about do you deserve a second chance? Other guys who have done other things have gotten second chances. And it occurred to me earlier today as I was listening to this interview again. This was from Mike and Mike yesterday. But I was listening to it again thanks to Jim Kushlin who sent it my way. And I'm thinking about second chances. And I'm thinking about why it is that Ray Rice will never see a National Football League roster again. And that's my firm belief. And it's not just because he averaged 3.5 yards a carry his last year that he played full time. He was playing injured. He was playing behind a banged up offensive line. It was a bad situation all the way around. And the fact that he has missed 2 years of football means he's got 2 years less wear and tear on that body of his. So you would think that given the, you know, the hunger for productive backs in this league, and there are some guys in this league that we know are here because simply there just aren't very many good backs. You would think he would get another opportunity as a veteran who has won, who has been a rushing champion and all the rest. You would think he would have an opportunity, but he'll never get it again. And it's in part because of the visual. The visual. Just hearing that he was convicted or pled guilty to domestic abuse is not enough. Because sadly, domestic abuse is something we hear about all the time. In sports and out of sports. It's unfortunate, but it is. And because you hear about it, oftentimes people become numb to it, right? They become numb to it and they say, oh, there's another one. But there was video of this one. There was video of the argument in the elevator, the surveillance video, and then there's video of the physical confrontation, and then there's video of the straight right hand that knocked his then fiance out, and then he dragged her out of the elevator, and that's all we were able to see. That visual is what stopped him from getting, I think, any kind of a I don't want to say pass. Nobody deserves a pass for that anyway, obviously. But the reason why perhaps he is being blackballed from the NFL, whereas other individuals who have done terrible, terrible things have been given second chances. And it occurred to me earlier today as I was listening to this Jim Kushlin. When Ben Roethlisberger missed time last year with the Steelers because of injuries, who came in and played quarterback for him?
It was Michael Vick, right?
Michael Vick was still in the NFL as of last year. And he was with he's been in the NFL for the last several years. Michael Vick was given a second chance. Michael Vick was allowed to come back and play in the National Football League. As long as there was an owner and a general manager who wanted to sign him, he was welcome to come back.
And this was after missing two seasons, by the way, which is where Rice is now. He's missed two full seasons, 14 and 15.
And the difference being, Michael Vick's missed two seasons were because he was in a federal penitentiary.
Right.
And I asked myself today, and I said, I'm going to ask this of you on the program today. Not you, Jim, but and you can feel free to answer it too, but to anybody listening and who wants to dial in the next hour, I can't, we don't have time for it now, but 866-240-1065. Whose crime was worse? Whose crime was more unforgivable? Now, as I ask you to consider that, and again, don't dial now. I don't want your answer yet. I want you to think about it. The first blush reaction would be to say what? Well, of course, Ray Rice's. Ray Rice victimized a human being, a woman. Michael Vick victimized animals. And if you just stop there and say human versus animal, then the answer is clear. Michael Vick deserves a second chance before Ray Rice does. But I would ask you to consider the whole stories. I would ask you to consider the totality of the events in each of those cases. In the Ray Rice case, as vicious and as terrible and as criminal as it was, throwing a punch at the face of his soon-to-be wife, as we saw in that video, it was a one-time, heat-of-the-moment, terrible, horrible, reprehensible, criminal lapse of judgment. A fit of anger, a fit of temper, whatever it is you want to call it, that made him commit that terrible crime against that woman, his fiancée. But it was a one-time thing, and he has spent the last 2 years expressing probably more contrition and more regret, and he has done more. He has offered to play and donate his entire salary to a women's victims of domestic violence funds, that sort of thing, to charity. Compare that, if you will. Now, again, just take the fact that one is a human victim and the others are canine victims. Take that out of the equation for a moment and compare it to Michael Vick, whose crimes were committed repeatedly over the course of a period of years. Over the course of a period of years. Not a temporary loss of control, not a temporary moment of anger, not a temporary moment of rage where you just reached out and did something you immediately thought, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. A planned, calculated, covered up organization that literally made money by torturing animals. Literally, the job, the hobby, the goal, the entire thing was geared around torturing dogs in the most gruesome methods that you can imagine torturing an animal. And then executing dogs that were deemed to be unworthy of living because they dared to lose a fight. Or were not prepared to fight on time when there was money to be made. All of the federal and state and local investigations revealed back in 2007, you know this, all of the gruesome details of the ways that he and his friends at the Bad News Kennels executed dogs, hanging them, you know, lynching them by nooses until they died, struggling and scrapping and trying to breathe as their wind is taken from them, their air is taken from them, drowning them, holding them underwater until they die, soaking them and then electrocuting them with cattle prods, soaking them in water and then electrocuting them, slamming them onto the pavement, picking them up and firing them down and spiking them into the ground until they're dead. This was done for a period of at least 6 years. And had police not stumbled across this while investigating another crime, accidentally stumbling across it, it might still be going on today. So if you take these events in their totality, whose crime was worse? The ongoing six-year crime spree committed by Michael Vick and his friends that led to a 21-month a federal incarceration, or Ray Rice and his moment in time of outrage and anger and temper and loss of control and striking his then fiance and now his wife. Who is worse? Whose crime was worse? And I really don't know what your answer will be. I'm asking only because we know what the NFL and the NFL owners believe is worse. They believe that Ray Rice is far worse than Michael Vick, because Michael Vick has been playing in the NFL in some capacity for the last, 4 years, 5 years?
About six, actually, because he played a good four with Philly.
Thank you. 6 years, and Ray Rice can't get a sniff. I'm going to talk about that more on the other side of the news, or the Sports Center, I should say, which is coming up. Before I do send you to that Sports Center, though, how about we lighten the mood with something sweet for you? It's the sweet deal of the week. And this week, it's Rockin' Whiskey Saloon, located at 2460 West Lasky. The Rockin' Whiskey Saloon is Toledo's premier country rock and sports headquarters. They feature 17 HD TVs, three 130-inch projection TVs, with great food and live entertainment every weekend. $50 gift certificates go on sale in the morning for just $25 at our website, 1065theticket.com. That's at 9 a.m. while the supplies last. Or you can get a freebie right now, a $50 gift certificate to the Rockin' Whiskey Saloon right now. Caller 10, it's yours at 866-240-1065. Right back after this.
My obstacle is very different, you know, and it's very unique. We understand those things, but I wasn't on the down part of my career. I played through that. I do know that it's not my athletic ability. It's not because I'm going to be 30 next year. You know, so I know it's not athletic ability, you know, so I'm going to scratch that and say that my situation is very different. I understand that, but one thing I've always came from in my life, when you start something, you finish it. And everything that I've been through in my life, for me to get back on the football field, I will be finishing to be able to tell my children a story that, you know, something that their dad went through. I want to be able to dictate that to them, not let others dictate that for me. That all stems from, you know, can we get a meeting?
So you're saying no one has met with you? Haven't met with anybody, any coach, any owner, anybody else about coming back and getting a job? No one has had time with you. Yeah.
Well, coaches, we're in contact with coaches, general managers, and things like that. But my situation is different. Like I said, we have to go to another level to try to, you know, get a second chance. I do understand the situation. Like, domestic violence is not something to take lightheartedly. You know, I've learned a lot about it. I'm not sitting here pounding my chest saying I deserve a second chance. But I know my second chance is going to have to come from, you know, an owner's approval. That's the hurdle, you know, and I'm not sitting up here saying that Ray Rice is deserving of that. Ray Rice is working towards finishing a story the right way. Yes, I do want to finish on the field, but I am 29 years old and I got a long life to live. I do want to finish the right way.
Doctors told me since two spinal fusions, you know, can't play Major League Baseball anymore. So I just want to thank my teammates, you know, all the coaches, staff. You know, I'm really miss being around those guys, because a lot of fun. And I just been in the big league clubhouse since I was their age. So, you know, to not be able to play is going to be tough. Enjoy my career so far and play with these guys. He's helped me out a lot this year. You know, seeing him come to the field every day with a good attitude really helped me out, you know.
I'm on Rangers now, so I forgot about the teams I played with. Also, thank Detroit. And especially Milwaukee, you know, that's where I started out. You know, that's where everything, you know, that's what got me here. This year is the most fun I've ever had and the best I ever felt mentally about baseball, you know. That's the only thing that really hurts about not being able to play is that my brain was really good with my body now. It just gave out.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward into hour number two, are we right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. It's 12 minutes after the hour of four. That gives us what? Do my math for me here. 48 minutes of outstanding awesomeness left to go. I want you to be a part of these 48 minutes, by the way, at 866-240-1065, all right? If you want to tweet to us, you can do that at Sports Radio 106.5, or if you want to follow us on Facebook and leave comments there. By the way, speaking of Facebook, Jim, I put it up right before the show.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed it. We've all seen Uncle Drew.
Yeah.
And you know, Kyrie Irving dressed as an old dude going out there and schooling young bloods.
Sure.
And them wondering, oh my God, you know, and of course the first time it came out, it was like amazing. Everybody's like, oh my God, they thought this old man was really doing all this. Well, there's a new version of this, not with Kyrie Irving and not with basketball. That was old man game. Now it's old man strength. You gotta see the old man who goes into some of the toughest and strongest and most well-known gyms, weightlifting gyms.
Okay.
And watch the old man bring old man strength to the floor and watch the reactions. It's very cool. I don't even know who it's for. I forgot. I just found it today. And as soon as I saw it, I just kind of laughed and said, that's pretty awesome. That's a new spin on, obviously, the old Uncle Drew idea, and I just thought it was kind of cool. So I threw it up there for your enjoyment.
Nice.
Just go ahead and log on to Facebook. Our Facebook page is 106.5 The Ticket, and take a look. And I think you have to click the – there was a problem with the link. You don't click the pick because all that's going to be is a pick, I believe. You have to click the words, and then you can push play at the bottom. That's, I think, how it works. Anyway, you'll find your way around it. You know how to use Facebook. We just heard a good montage there again from Jim Cushlin. Alex Rodriguez is done tomorrow. Prince Fielder is done already. We spent a good deal of time in the first hour talking about that. I want to move on to the other part of that montage, the first part, which was so interesting to me, and that is Ray Rice. Ray Rice will not be in uniform tonight for any NFL team. He will not be in uniform tomorrow as the NFL preseason games get underway. He is not on a roster, and it is very likely he'll never be on a roster. I asked you a question before the break. And I would really love your answer on the air, 866-240-1065. Whose crime was worse? Michael Vick's, the crime that he was convicted of in 2007, pleading guilty, by the way, which is why he got as light of a sentence as he did, 21 months in a federal penitentiary. Did he go to Leavenworth? Why do I remember Leavenworth?
That may be. I got to double check where he was.
Michael Vick Federal Prison. I just want to say, I think he was in Leavenworth, Kansas. Fort Leavenworth is like one of the harshest federal prisons there is. It's where, you know, a lot of military, you know, personnel go if they're convicted of treason or any other federal crimes. When you talk about Leavenworth, I think he went to Leavenworth. I could be wrong about that, but I thought he went to Leavenworth. Anyway, not that it matters too much. What does matter is my question because of the Ray Rice question. Ray Rice was on with Mike and Mike in the morning on Wednesday, yesterday morning. And they were asking him about his prospects of coming back. And you heard during the clip there that Jim just played in the montage to start the hour. He has been in contact. He and his agent have been in contact with coaches and general managers, and there have been discussions, but nothing has been offered. And it's his belief, and it's mine too, that it has more to do with Ray Rice's conviction of domestic abuse against his wife than it does his 3.5 average per carry in his last full year of playing football in 2013. Some are saying that if he was good enough and if he had averaged 4.5 yards a carry, people would overlook the criminal conviction. People would say he deserves a second chance. I don't know if that's true. I think the video makes a difference. The video makes a difference here. Seeing him punch his wife in that elevator video is something you can't erase out of your mind. You can't unsee that. We didn't see, even though I could read for you in graphic description, we didn't see Michael Vick's crimes. We didn't see him electrocuting the dogs on video. We didn't see him beating them to death. We just have to rely on graphic descriptions from those who know the facts of the case. There was an interesting piece as recently as March of 2014, so just a little over 2 years ago, when Michael Vick was signed by the New York Jets. And this was in the Village Voice, and it was written by somebody named Tessa Stewart, whose headline was, "Reminder, Michael Vick's dogs were shot, electrocuted, hanged, and beaten to death." And this writer just wanted everybody to know that the quarterback you're about to cheer for, as they bring Michael Vick on for another second chance, is a reprehensible human being. And I'm just going to read some of this as you answer the question, or at least consider the question that I asked. Whose crime was worse? The one against the human should be given the default answer. The default answer should be the crime committed against the human. And Ray Rice was convicted of punching his wife. Automatically, that should supersede anything that was done to a dog, right? But as I said before, not just a thing that was done to a dog, multiple things that were done to multiple dogs. Here are some of the details from the Village Voice from literally just 2 years ago when Michael Vick, who had been given another chance to play in the league, was signed by the New York Jets. This weekend, the New York Jets signed quarterback Michael Vick to a one-year contract worth a reported $5 million. Vick, according to the New York Daily News columnist Gary Myers, arrives in New York, quote, with some forgettable baggage from his former days as a dog fighter, end quote. Forgettable baggage, huh? Sounds like now might be a good time to remind Myers and Jets fans with only a distant memory of the case of the crimes for which Michael Vick served 21 months in prison. In addition to plunking down $34,000 to buy the Smithfield, Virginia property, where dozens of dogs were chained to car axles, buried in the ground, while they fought, sometimes to the death, in front of betting spectators. Vick and his co-defendants admitted to killing at least six, but perhaps as many as eight dogs, who did not display sufficient aggressive traits during the testing process. Several of the dogs were shot. At least two were hosed down, then electrocuted. Three dogs were hanged until they were dead, according to a report by the USDA Inspector General, by placing a nylon cord over a 2x4 that was nailed to two trees. I want you to get that image in your head. Had you seen that on video the way you saw Ray Rice on video, could you, would you have wanted Michael Vick to have a second chance? Three more dogs were drowned by putting their heads in a 5-gallon bucket of water. And you can assume that the dogs were muzzled so that they couldn't bite as they tried to survive. They muzzled the dogs, then stick their heads in 5-gallon buckets of water until they inhale water through their nose into their lungs and die. Vick, with his partner Quanis Phillips, killed yet another dog, quote, by slamming it to the ground several times before it died, breaking the dog's back or neck. When another of his dogs was disqualified after jumping out of the ring during a fight, Vick had his associate Pernell Peace shoot the dog in the head with a .22 caliber pistol. When federal officers raided Vick's property in 2007, they rescued 53 pit bulls. They also found 9 pit bull carcasses, took samples of 2 skeletal remains, collected spent shell casings, syringes, and pieces of plywood flooring and drywall covered with dark-stained canine blood. Other evidence seized from the property included a rape stand, a device in which a female dog was strapped, her head fully restrained so she could be raped by other dogs without ripping their throats out. The idea, of course, was to breed more fighters, and the female dogs were too vicious and dangerous to be trusted to breed naturally, so they created rape stands. Forgettable baggage? The writer concludes, Vick, who now works with the Humane Society, a partnership proposed by a Vick handler before he was even done serving his sentence, would probably like Jets fans to think his dogfighting convictions, or think of his dogfighting Vick convictions in those terms. Forgettable baggage of a past gone by. But it's probably less forgettable than for the dogs that were rescued from the Vick bad news kennels, the folks who did the rescuing, and the families who adopted the dogs that could be adopted after all that had happened to them. So there were so many details on this that were just so vicious. If you had not just heard me read them, but if you had seen them on video the way we saw Ray Rice, who would you say is more suitable for a second chance in the National Football League? Would you say Michael Vick, or would you say Ray Rice? Now, you don't have to answer either or. You can say both should be given second chances if you wish. Or you can say neither one of them deserves a second chance. They shouldn't be allowed to make millions of dollars after those terrible crimes. But I'm telling you that since we can't have that hypothetical, because Michael Vick has already been given a second chance, doesn't Ray Rice, just by the very comparison of his one moment in time horrific, angry, outrageous lapse of judgment and anger and violence striking his wife, doesn't that guy deserve a second chance if this guy, who committed these terrible crimes against dogs over a period of roughly 6 years, if he got a second chance? By the way, Michael Vick is still working out right now. He's training. He's been working with a quarterbacks coach down in Florida. Remember, he filled in for the Steelers last year for Ben Roethlisberger, the Jets before that. And he's still looking for another opportunity, and he's good to go. If he doesn't get signed, it's because of performance, and he was awful for the Steelers. But he played and has played for the last 6 years. Ray Rice has never gotten another sniff. Who would you be more inclined to give a second chance to? Ray Rice, with a human victim of his crime, or Michael Vick, with multiple canine victims of his crimes? Darren in Bowling Green. Darren, thank you for joining us on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, go right ahead. What do you think?
Hey, Bob, thanks for taking my call today. You know, both of these guys really are kind of scumbags in my book. But just remember, from a human being perspective, somebody that tortures animals as frequently as Vic supposedly did, eventually would take that same behavior towards a human being, given the opportunity. So had we not discovered what happened to Michael Vick and had this behavior gone on, he potentially could have done that to a stranger, his wife, his girlfriend, whatever his case was, and it would have continued. Ray Rice, and again, we don't, you know, really know other than what the elevator story or video showed us.
Right.
We don't, and I'm not excusing what he did, so please
not
don't.
Not at all. Not at all. I don't want anybody to think that I am either as I make this comparison. I'm just using it as a, you know, perhaps the most famous second chance being given to
right.
somebody like Michael Vick, who committed these crimes knowingly and wantonly and repeatedly and with sadism. I mean, honestly, I don't know if there's any other way to describe it. He and the others in the dogfighting community there were sadists in their torture
exactly.
of these animals. I just, you know, that's as bad as it gets, and yet he got back in the league, and I wonder why Ray Rice, as horrific as his crime against his fiance was, why he wouldn't get, you know, an opportunity as well.
Exactly. And as far as, you know, the public knows, this isn't something that Ray Rice had done in the past or was, you know, prone to
right.
hurt another human being. But
now we don't know that. Now we don't know that, obviously.
Right, right.
But I will
don't
tell
know
you this.
That.
I will tell
and
you
that's
this.
Why it's,
when the video first came out, on this show, I was describing it, and obviously everybody watched it. But I will say this, that I said at the time, and I still would say again, if I had the video in front of me right now, which I do not, the casual manner in which he dragged her body out of the elevator after he knocked her cold, it indicated to me something that, you know, he had done before, only because he was just so casual about it. In other words, after he threw the punch on that video, you didn't see him put his hands to his head and go, "Oh my God, what did I just do?" And jumping around
right,
and like, "Oh my
right.
God, oh my God, are you okay?" He just kind of like knocked her out and then bent over and picked her up and dragged her like it was old hat. Like, this is just,
right.
this is what I do. Now, I have nothing to base that on, and I'm not trying to convict him of something that he may never have done before, but it
sure.
looked like to me like this wasn't an unusual circumstance for him, and that was one of the things that disgusted me as much as anything.
Absolutely, and I certainly, you know, you hear the stories in sports or in life in general of domestic abuse, and until I saw that video, you know, I thought, oh, you know, this doesn't really affect me, and maybe I should, you know, it's not fair of me to judge somebody, but that certainly changed, you know, my outlook on
yeah, it is amazing what video can do for you when you see the crime. Like I said, I'll give another example. I mentioned the Michael Vick story, and one of the other most prominent players in the National Football League of this era is perhaps the greatest running back of this era, and that's Adrian Peterson. You
mm-hmm.
know, and he ended up getting suspended for domestic violence against his child. And
there's right.
the debate about what's domestic violence, what is child abuse, and what is discipline. And we saw only still photographs of the child's
yes.
Welts still
yep.
seeping and bleeding. And mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, last year when we saw these things, it's been, I guess, a little over a year, when we saw these pictures, they said those were 4 days after the actual wounds were inflicted, and they were
yeah.
still seeping. The still photographs were horrific enough, but had we seen video, that hand,
exactly.
and that arm, and that switch, that whip,
yep.
if you will, coming up and down on a four-year-old's body, the way
yep.
that he obviously did it, it probably would have jarred us in the same way that the Rice elevator video jarred you.
It definitely would have. And think about this too, Bob. What happens if, I mean, Adrian Peterson, total NFL icon, great running back. Well, you know, Ray Rice is still kind of a young guy. Maybe not as great as Adrian was.
That's true.
Although he did do good things with the Ravens. His last year in the league, of course, he had some injuries and his average was lower. It's who you are.
Yeah,
I agree.
He's still, you know, Ray Rice was still though a productive guy. Not an old guy. You know, remember he's
right.
You know, he's let's see, how old is he right now? Is he
29?
29. He's still 29 years old. And even with that 3.1 yards per carry average in 2013, if you look just 1 year prior, he was 4.4. He ran for 1,100 yards and 9 touchdowns. The year before that, 4.7, 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns. And he was injured in 2013. So
right.
You could say, well, he can't play anymore, but he's still just 29 years old. I think he can, and I think there are a lot of clubs that would at least bring him in for a physical, a workout, a tryout, or something, if they didn't want to have every media member, along with every women's rights organization and domestic abuse organization, et cetera, flocking to their doors, screaming and exhorting season ticket holders to non-renew their tickets and tear them up rather than go and support somebody who did such a horrible thing.
Well, exactly.
He absolutely has been blackballed because of that video.
And conspiracy theory, you know, the owners probably got together and go, well, Goodell, you really screwed this up. Let's all agree. Don't anybody sign him because we don't need any more bad press around
exactly
him.
Right.
And that's probably the reality of it.
That's what's keeping him out of the league and stopping him from getting a second chance. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Money talks, Bob.
Thank you so much for the call, Darren. Really, really good stuff. It does. There's no doubt about that. Ray Rice pledged last month to donate his entire salary if somebody would give him a chance to come back to domestic violence programs. He said he would play for free. He just wants a chance to get back into the game that he's been out of for nearly, what, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
2 years?
Yeah,
two
full seasons. That last one was the one we keep referring to, and that was 2013. So two full seasons have gone by, which incidentally is the exact amount of time Michael Vick missed when he was in prison. I did look it up. It was Leavenworth. It was out there in Kansas.
Yeah.
So they both missed the same amount of time, but, you know, nobody's giving Ray Rice one, and that's why, you know, I've been thinking about this ever since the end of last hour, Bob, when you presented the question, and part of my answer, I'm not going to lie, that there's a personal hint to it for me, and that's because of Michael Vick's connection to playing at Virginia Tech.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. You're hoping.
His debut as a freshman was my first game as a freshman student sitting in the stands. So I personally feel like I watched him since, you know, day one.
Yeah.
And even though the video of Ray Rice, you know, is what it is, it jarred us all. There's no doubt in my mind that's the reason he still doesn't have a job. For example, just on running backs alone, think back a couple years when the Browns had like 3 injuries and they brought in way over the hill Willis McGahee.
Oh, yeah.
You know, somebody could find a spot for Ray Rice.
I mean, this
on
elite
a
is starving for playmaking
question.
Backs.
Yes.
They're starving for them. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, there's no question.
But it is clear to me that it's the video that we all remember seeing and talking for what feels like 2 weeks at the time when it happened. It just, the story just didn't feel died.
So let's go back to the original question, and Jim, feel free to answer it here. And if
all
you
right.
don't want to, you don't have to. I'm not forcing you to, obviously, but you know, and your loyalty to the Hokies notwithstanding here, whose crime was worse? Who is more deserving of a second chance? Somebody who tortured those animals for a period of years, and had he not been caught in a random way, like I said, there was
it was.
You know, yeah, you know, I mean, the police were there investigating a totally different situation,
right.
And they stumbled across this place when they you know, and then when they
took him a day or so to figure out that you know, Michael Vick, the quarterback of the Falcons, he was
property,
in Atlanta at the
and
time.
Then they did some aerial surveillance of the property, and then they saw how it was all blacked out. You know, they painted the roof black
right.
so that it would blend in with the trees so
right,
everybody
right.
could know that there were buildings underneath. And
it's messed up on all levels.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were hiding it, obviously, very, very well. Had they not been discovered, you know, I mean, Michael Vick's dogfighting operation might still be going on today. And by the way, we know that Michael Vick's dogfighting operation very likely is still going on today, just not with him involved anymore. Because this is a huge, huge part of a lot of Southern culture.
And don't forget, he grew up on the wrong side of town, as it were, in Newport News, that type of tidewater area in Virginia where Norfolk is.
That's exactly right. So, you know, it's very likely. I mean, we already know this is still going on, just like cockfighting and a lot of other animal abusive,
right,
you know, betting institutions do. But it still goes on. But he would still be a part of it, probably, if he had not been caught. He would still be financing it. Remember, he had just signed in 04 a $130 million contract. I mean, he was set forever, Michael Vick. He was going to continue to bankroll these things had he not been caught. But then again, his victims are dogs. And Ray Rice's victim was a human being. Now, fortunately, she wasn't tortured and murdered like the dogs or killed like the dogs. She was victimized by the punch that we all saw in that video. And she is fine, and she went on to forgive him and obviously to marry him. And ironically enough, they have a four-year-old daughter, and
yes,
they have another one due next month.
Right.
So they are happily living happily ever after here. But nonetheless, we can never, ever, 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 ever excuse domestic violence or try to clear him in any way of that. But on a case-by-case basis here, as you just kind of compare one to the other, whose crime was worse, Rice's or Vick's?
And that's such a tough question to answer. And of course, you know, any answer anyone gives, you feel like you have to do what I'm about to do, which is preface by saying, of course, we don't condone anything like that for either one.
Right.
But you rereading those details, which to a degree, some of them I had forgotten, because this was 2006 or 7, because that was quite a few years ago at this point.
Yeah, 07 is when he was sent to Leavenworth.
Talking eight, 9 years ago at this point.
Right. Yes.
And you know, I had forgotten some of the details.
That's why the writer that I was reading from
is a little worse.
Hold on. That's why the writer that I was reading from in the Village Voice there in New York felt the need to do that, because it was just 2 years ago. It was 2014. He was signed by the Jets. And the belief was that everybody was just glossing over the crimes, including Gary Myers writing for the New York Daily News saying, with a forgettable past or whatever. What was the word? Forgettable baggage.
That was it.
From his days as a former dog fighter. It's like, just forget about that baggage.
Nothing to see here.
It's a fresh start now. And the writer felt like, wait a minute, we can't just forget that. We need to know exactly and remind ourselves of what this guy did. That's why I felt the same way. I needed to read that to you and to everybody so you can really answer the question, which is worse, and how on earth does Michael Vick get a job in the NFL and have that black ball lifted or removed or whatever you want to call it, and Ray Rice can't?
Second question, believe it or not, is it should be easier for all of us to answer. Quarterback. I hate to say it like that, but the second question feels easier. He got another job also because he's a quarterback.
Yeah.
With a decent track record. You know, he rushed for 1,000 yards. Think of his Falcons. He rushed for 1,000 yards. He was the he was the quarterback of the first team to ever go into Lambeau in a playoff game and win in Green Bay. That had never been done before up to that point. So the second question feels a little easier to answer. Quarterback, I hate to say it that way, but it feels like that would be it. In terms of your original question, though, having reread the details and, of course, prefacing by saying, of course, we don't condone anything of any of these things. They're all horrific in their own different way. I got to go with Vick because I had forgotten how just gory some of those details were. And then the third thing I'm throwing out.
And how it wasn't, not only was it so gory, it wasn't a one-time thing. It wasn't like.
This went on for years.
He and his buddies got drunk one night and said, you know what, let's let the dogs at each other. And then, oh my God, one of them's hurt real bad. We better put it down. It wasn't just like a one-time thing. It wasn't just man, that was a really bad decision we made. What in the hell were we doing? They did it for years, and they did it. They could have executed the animals humanely when they were done abusing them as.
And the operation the authorities all eventually found when all this came to light.
Yeah.
That was helped by funding from Vick. Because he had already had some contracts as a Falcon by then, so he was making the kind of money that could, help him and all of his buddies out doing this.
Right, right. That's exactly right. So, so I agree with you, by the way. I think Vick's is worse. While we condone nothing that any of these guys have done, neither Adrian Peterson nor Ray Rice nor Michael Vick nor any of these things, the point, I think that Vick's, because it was sustained for as long as it was, that it was sadistic as it was, that it was just so incomprehensible, from a humanity standpoint as it was, that really actually kind of trumps the one time, one moment of anger, rage, loss of temper, loss of control, and domestic violence that Ray Rice committed. Both should have been prosecuted by the law and were.
Yes.
Both should have faced a severe penalty and punishment by the courts, which they were. Well, I don't know how severe Ray Rice's was, to be honest with you. I think he got a diversion program or something.
He more or less did. He's still living out his true punishment, which is nobody's picking up that phone in the NFL.
End of his career. Which is the end of his career is essentially his true true punishment, right?
Yep.
He can't get back to play, and he is scorned wherever he goes.
And I'm glad, by the way, you brought up the Adrian Peterson one to a previous caller, because that once again to me demonstrates that it's this video itself is why he still has no job.
Exactly.
Period. Because if there was, you kind of just said a minute ago, if there was video, not just still pictures of what Adrian Peterson did, I'm highly doubtful the Vikings would have brought him back.
You know, that's a really, 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 really great question. I got to tell you, did you see the pictures? The Adrian Peterson kid pictures?
Oh yeah, when the whole thing broke down.
Yeah, when the story broke. I'm not going to overdramatize and say I cried. I didn't cry, but I mean I looked at it and my heart just hurt for that little boy, because remember, this was a 4-year-old. And we found out the details about
I'm very familiar with that size in kids. My daughter just turned 5, so.
Okay. So, you know what I mean? And you know what the age of a 4-year-old is like.
Right.
You to expect that child to behave perfectly to the point where Daddy Peterson wasn't, quote, what did they call him? Wasn't it Daddy? Because he doesn't live. He's got 7 of them. He's got 7 kids, and they're all over the place. And the way the story turned out as as they investigated it, you know, he would visit the kids and wail on them when he visited them, as if to say, I'm here and it's time for your daily or your weekly or your monthly or however often the visit was, dose of discipline from Daddy Peterson. Go get me one of these switches and drop your britches. Here we go. And I'm thinking to myself, this isn't a 12-year-old who's out there dealing drugs or smoking weed, or committing violent crimes, where the father needs to step in and lay some serious corporal punishment down to stop this child's dangerous behavior.
Exactly, not even close to that.
We're talking about a 4-year-old who doesn't know any better than being a 4-year-old. And to see the wounds that were left on that child that we saw the pictures of 3 or 4 days after the wounds allegedly were inflicted, I said to myself, just from the pictures, my God, I don't want that man, and I don't even know if I used the word man, it might have been something far less complimentary, because it's just such a horrific behavior, but I wouldn't want him anywhere near my team. I wouldn't want him anywhere near my team's uniforms. I don't want to have to cheer for that guy. If you had taken that to the next level and we saw video, if somebody would have flipped on their cell phone camera as he was beating that child with that whip-like object, the 4-year-old, you can imagine the screaming, you can imagine the torment. I think you're right, Jim. I don't think the Vikings would have brought him back. I don't think Roger Goodell would have reinstated him. I can't imagine if there was an actual child abuse video like that that was actually released via TMZ or anywhere else the way the Ray Rice video was. It means so much more when you see it taking place.
Exactly.
But because we didn't see it take place with Adrian Peterson, he was brought back.
Right.
We didn't see it take place with Michael Vick, even though we know it did because he was in prison for it. He was brought back.
Not to mention on the Vick one, especially relative to Peterson and Rice, more time has now elapsed since all this took place, so it's easier for some to flush it down the memory hole.
Yeah, but that's not very germane to this discussion, because there was very little time that went by from the time he was released from Leavenworth to the time he was brought back by the Eagles.
Good point.
So they brought him back knowing full well there was going to be some controversy, some people were going to complain, some people were going to boo, some people were going to protest outside or whatever, and they did it anyway, and it's large part because it's only on paper. We don't have video of it. Ray Rice we have video of, and therefore he pays the harshest price among all of these individuals who have gotten in this kind of trouble for violent acts against other beings, whether they be women, children, or animals. Ray Rice pays the harshest price. Tony in Perrysburg's got some thoughts on this. Let's get him on the air before we take our time out here. Tony, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
How you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. I want to preface the statement by saying that I don't think any of these guys should be let back in the league.
Of course.
I'm sorry. If you've got a dream job like that, and the only rules are you can't beat people, you can't have dog rings, you can't smoke weed, I think if they get caught doing any of those things, they lose their job. Oh, well, I'm not going to shed a tear.
So a zero-tolerance policy right from Jump Street, if you go into the league and you've got a dream job paying you millions, you mess up just once in a case like this, and you're done. You don't get to come back. That's your policy.
Absolutely. You're given a huge opportunity. Huge.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't disagree with you, and I kind of like the idea of that kind of policy. You are doing something that millions of guys who have ever played junior high or high school football would give their left arm for, though you couldn't be a very good player with one arm.
You're getting paid an incredible amount of money to do it, to set up your family, your kids.
Exactly.
Kids.
For the rest of your life. Work for 3 or 4 years, and you end up making enough money to retire on, and your kids as well. And then you go and commit acts like this. I'm with you. I don't mind saying I like the harsh idea, the harsh tolerance.
In your two situations, I think you get it wrong. I find what Ray Rice did much, much more reprehensible.
More reprehensible than Michael Vick?
Yes.
Tell me
this is why. Let me explain. It is Michael Vick, the intention, legally, yes, he is more guilty of a greater crime through the legal system. Mm-hmm. However, dogfighting is kind of a cultural thing. I guarantee you these guys grew up watching dogfights.
That at least also came out during the whole Vic process when all this was happening. That came out that they had been more or less semi around or familiar with it since they were kids.
That's what I mean. So, and it's a culture thing. And I know some people who actually, from my Army days, who actually participated in dogfighting. I find what he did to the animals reprehensible. Yes, but let's keep in mind they are animals.
See, I can't buy the, but what I can't buy the, hold on a second, Tony and Jim, I can't buy the, hey, it's part of their culture thing, because part of their culture or not, they knew it was illegal. They knew that everything that they were doing wasn't going to be accepted as, hey, man, this is just what we do down here in the South.
That's right.
Because otherwise they wouldn't have had painted their buildings black, their roofs black, so that nobody could spy them from helicopters.
No, the intent.
And all of the covert stuff that they did. You know, it's not like it's an accepted part of culture.
The intent is surely there. They knew what they were doing, and that's why I prefaced my statement with my opinion on the whole matter overall.
Yeah, I know, I get it. But here's the other thing. Let me just throw this to the culture debate, because Jim's right. They knew when this investigation started and people started saying, okay, how prevalent is dogfighting and where? And come to find out, it's mostly, not all, and I don't want this to sound like a racial thing, but this is what they found. It is more a part of minority culture in the South. Mostly minorities
Absolutely.
In the South do this. Not only, but mostly. And so they say that's part of the culture, so maybe there's at least some bit of, you know, extenuating circumstances that might provide for a tiny bit of leniency if this is what they know as their culture. My response to that would be, you know what else is a part of certain cultures in certain part of the country? Incest, inbreeding.
Sure.
That is a part of the culture in a lot of Appalachian and other places. And guess what? Nobody is ever going to accept it because it's part of their culture. It's wrong, and it leads to victims in many, many, many different ways. So I've got no mercy for the, hey, it's part of their culture argument.
Totally agree with you. But and the intent was there. And in the legal system, like I say, they're more guilty of a greater crime.
For a longer period of time, and, you know, for multiple crimes. And that's really big.
That's another thing I wanted to correct you on, because you keep on saying for this one incident with Ray Rice. And I realize that this one incident was caught on video, but if you hit a woman like that, I can't believe that's the first time you've ever hit a woman.
Well, you probably heard me say, you know, this is the only one that we know of, and in my opinion, when I've watched that video, it appeared to me, and I'll say it again now, it appeared to me the way he acted after it indicated a guy who wasn't freaking out by it. It was a guy who had been down this road before. It's like, oh, she's out cold again, and I'm going to drag her out of here.
God,
it looked
what,
like it had been done before,
what did
didn't
I
it?
Do?
Say, I'm sorry,
what
time?
Drag her out. He said it wasn't like He was like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. What did you do? He grabbed her arm and dragged her out of the elevator.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is the first time he's ever done that.
Yeah, because it looked too casual. It looked too, you know, prepared, like, yep, this is what I do whenever I knock my woman out. I just got to get her out of here and get her in the car and take her home. You know, it just looked too comfortable, too easy for him, and he didn't have any moment of freak out, like, oh my God, what have I done? What did I just do? Baby, I'm so sorry. I didn't see any of that in the video, and it's a good reason to suspect that he has done it before, but we don't know that, and that's why I have to keep saying it that way. This is the only one we can confirm.
I have to believe that wasn't the first time.
Yeah.
We're
repeating ourselves because we both have said that. I have to believe it wasn't the first time either. But from a legal perspective, it's the only time that we know of. From a legal perspective, Michael Vick's crimes had gone on for 6 years. So we know all of those multiple times. We just don't know or can't confirm the other ones with Rice. And that's where
with Rice, and this is what it boils down to with me, is with the big situation, we're talking about animals.
Yeah.
Not human beings, and to be able to do that to a human being you supposedly love, in my eyes, makes you a monster. So I think what he did is much more egregious. On a personal level.
And that's why I asked for the question. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I just wanted to hear how everybody felt, Tony, and I'm glad you weighed in on it. My friend, I got to run, though. I'm late on my break here. Let me get a quick timeout. We'll come back after a Sports Center and wrap it up maybe with a couple more calls or a couple more comments right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
4:54, just a few minutes left. Thanks once again, and congratulations to our sweet deal winner. It is Brian Mello or Milo. Mello or Milo?
Mello.
All right. Mello. Yeah, you like Mello Yellow? Anyway, Brian is from Napoleon. He got the sweet deal to the Rockin' Whiskey Saloon, 2640 West Lasky. Don't forget, you can get a $50 gift certificate for just $25 tomorrow morning starting at 9 a.m. on 1065theticket.com. I'm going to squeeze in a couple more calls if we're able to on this Michael Vick versus Ray Rice story, of course, which was born of the Ray Rice interview on Mike and Mike yesterday as he watches yet another NFL preseason come and probably very likely to end without him being a part of it. He cannot get back into the league after his domestic violence assault captured on video from 2 years ago. Sam in Sylvania is next. Sam, go right ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, Bob, what's going on? Hey, whether it's Michael Vick or whether it's, you know, Adrian Peterson, the key is it's not about right or wrong in the NFL. It's about who's marketable and who's not. Ray Rice had a terrible year the last year he played. He's on the downhill side of his career. You know, nothing about Ray Rice is appealing for the NFL as far as merchandising or viewership. But with a guy like Michael Vick, had nothing to do with what he did. Adrian Peterson beat his kid. The pictures are there. It's an absolute horrendous story. But he's still marketable and he's still top of his game. So it basically boils down to how much revenue they can generate as to whether they're going to make it.
Not only how much revenue they can generate, but how much revenue will they cost their team if the protesters really come out in full force?
Amen.
Who will come out more? And there was a big, blowback, I guess, of public opinion against the Eagles when they brought Michael Vick in, and there were people who threatened to tear up their season tickets, were not going to support the team, but eventually it died down, and the animal rights groups kind of started to back off and go away. And I would imagine it would be the same thing here with Ray Rice. If a team is willing to withstand the first, you know, month or 2 months of anger and vitriol from women's rights groups and anti-domestic violence organizations, you know, they'd probably see their revenue bounce back again, but it's a question as to whether or not they want to run that risk.
Well, the risk is this, though. With Michael Vick, it was a risk-reward. With Ray Rice being out of the league, being his age, and having a bad year, it's not worth the risk to bring in a guy who's probably not going to contribute. You can probably find a free agent out there who can give you the same kind of performance that he's going to give you without that first couple weeks of distraction.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And that distraction, again, you know, we talked about it before, and it's sad but true. At 4.5 yards of carry in his last year, the distraction is worth it. At 3.1 yards of carry in his last year, the distraction might not be worth it, and that's where these teams are coming down.
Right.
And it's unfortunate for Rice on both fronts because, again, he played his last year very, very injured. You know, when he averaged 3.1 yards a carry, when he was healthy the year before, he was 4.5 and was one of the better backs in the league. So that's where it is. Hey, thanks for the call, Sam. I appreciate it. Music is playing, which means we are out of time. Stay where you are because Mike Miller is standing by with Drive Time. He will take you home. And tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock, we will have what we like to call a free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganzas. Hopefully, you will be with us for that. Thanks so much for listening today. We'll talk to you then. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.